Dieter and Jake, just trying to get this one over with because, my goodness, what a perfunctory. It was everything we said it was going to be. Like,
yep.
It just wasn't a very high level
prediction, right?
Did you nail the score on this?
I got close. I said 31-23, I think, and it was 34-24. So
it was a game that they controlled entirely. They were up 27-10 in the fourth quarter after running the ball 8 consecutive times on a 9-play drive.
Yeah, with
Brian Robinson coming through, 5 really nice carries for Brian Robinson,
and then him running in slow motion on the kickoff, and Kyle being like, "What are you doing?" And then he like broke 4 tackles also in slow motion. I don't know what that was, but good for him. That was fun.
I mean, frankly, I don't want to take. I legitimately don't want to take anything away from the 49ers.
But
people say that, and then they immediately take stuff away. Like the win's the win, and I thought the Niners played very well. The Giants are a disaster, and that's what it looked like on film, and that's what it felt like in the game. And this is why I said that this was more of a referendum on the Niners. Like, can you just take care of what is very easy business? Because if you can't do that, then we got a big problem. And if you can do that, that's great, and you deserve a win, and every win is important in the NFL. But, like, did we learn anything about the San Francisco 49ers today?
We learned that they are down another crucial piece of the defensive line. So
we almost got out of there with another prediction that you made being true.
I feel bad that I made that prediction now.
I don't think it's any clearly we have no say over any
I mean
of
it has yeah, but it was they were doing well. They were actually okay for a second.
it was I mean, there was a moment where Upton Stout was declared out by only Kevin Harlan. Upton Stout was back on the field.
We're not going to do comments until the end, but I do want to bring one up just briefly. I know, like, I mentioned it early. It felt like that was truly just the worst Kevin Harlan performance I've heard in a long time. And Trent Green, I think, just brought him down a level where he's like, what do we... And remember when Kittle got hurt and they didn't address it for like a full 5 minutes?
Yeah, he had a Charlie horse.
The guys that were like replaying it, they're like, guys, Kittle.
Anytime now.
Kittle's hurt. They're like, oh, it appears. Yikes.
So, listen, this is the NFL. Guys are going to get injured. Y'all want to go in on the performance staff or whatever? That's fine. Come in with actual sourced opinion on who should get the job. I couldn't tell you. I don't know who's good in this space or not. I don't know any of the stuff they do.
What is cool is doing conspiracy theory bullshit on the internet and then just spouting absolute nonsense. And
I like to be both nerdy and holistic sometimes. And again, they fired every now and again, they just fire the staff and then they replace it, the key guy, with the number two guy. And if you want to do some conspiracy theories, why is it that they never go out of house? Have fun with that one. But in the meantime, they have fired, since I've started covering the 49ers in 2014, they've fired like the head of medicine or performance or whatever. Like,
they've changed
four
it like
times.
Twice. And then the last guy left to do hockey, I think, somewhere else.
I think we can
Ben Peterson, because they changed, they overhauled the staff this year where they promoted two guys who were number twos to like co-number ones.
So at this point, it's not about the person in charge or whatever, because they keep
changing. I don't
know
enough about medicine to give an informed opinion.
Here's what I do know. There are a lot of teams in the NFL that are extremely injured. It seems as if there are a couple. I mean, Buffalo's defense is ravaged. They still find ways to win. And then, look at the Chargers. The Chargers every year. It's the same thing. I don't know what it is. I'm done even pretending in talking about it, because we can't speak with any authority whatsoever. And if you just want to bellyache and bitch about it, feel free. Right. Like, legitimately, it's worthy of bellyaching and bitching, but like, 100%. That's not what we do here.
Well, it's sometimes what we do, but it's not about this.
Not about this.
I will say, as far as the game is concerned, in my column, I barely talked about the game because it was what we expected for once, where it was not chaos, really. It was the Giants sucking and the 49ers being a far better coached, far better run operation that just beat them by, running the ball effectively. I think Spencer Burford will have to see, but he was clearly not as diabolically bad as Connor Colby is.
He had one bad rep. That's about all I know.
He got beat real bad on one. Colton McKivitz looked like he got worked quite a bit. That wasn't helpful. But they just ran the ball so effectively. And I think on defense, you know, D'Amador Lenore is just coming up with the worst play of all time every time the camera pans to him, trying to get in a fight with Ray-Ray McCloud because they were tweeting at each other like 3 weeks ago when Ray-Ray, before Ray-Ray got cut. Just really, every time Lenore's involved on a play, it looks stupid. And
it's small stuff.
He looked responsible for the last touchdown. I thought Stout and Green were much better in this game.
Yeah.
Again, granted, pretty horrible operation the Giants are running. Not a lot of great skill position players tracking them, but like, good games.
Yes. I just want to give you my four studs from the jump. We can cover those bases, see if you want to add anybody, and then we can talk about the good players, because that's what the majority of time should be spent on after a game like that. D'Amador Lenore. It gets worse every week. If it isn't penalties, it's just complete boneheaded plays. He's giving crazy cushion. It does nothing. And now he's decided, I don't tackle anymore, which that used to be something that made him very good. And that Theo Johnson touchdown, that's on him.
Yeah,
100%. I understand that Johnson's much larger than him, but Johnson's soft. He's not even close to a true tight end. And the idea that they just stood and looked at each other, am I in bounds? And then he goes in, that's inexcusable. And then you see again and again and again, anytime the action is over on his side, he doesn't bring anyone to the ground. He pushes guys out of bounds. He's lost that physicality. I don't think they'll continue to start him, like, because
they have to.
But I think that if the Niners were in a better position, they might make an example out of him with some of this tape that we've seen over the last couple of weeks and be like, how about you take, if Marquise Siegel can get, you know, have to watch a game from a press box, if CJ West has to watch the game from the press box, if all these guys are getting taught lessons, like D'Amador Lenore is not above it because he's not playing any better than a rookie would be right now. It just isn't.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing going forward. I think the question fundamentally is, like, how do you view this team if you're the Niners? Because this is where this is the week, literally today and tomorrow is where you decide, what do you actually think of this team? What do you think is possible? And I think realistically, the secondary is still a mess.
Right.
It can get better, but it's still going to be ugly. You're not going to make an acquisition there. That's just, I think, the reality of where you're at. It would be unwise to make a one-year deal for like a Trey Hendrickson or a Jalen Phillips, unless you're going to extend them, right? Let's just say we're going in that direction, right? I can't fathom them doing that for a guy who's on a one-year deal. I could see Jermaine Johnson because he's got a fifth-year option that's like $13 million, played for Saleh. And if you send out like a third to get back like a sixth or something for Johnson, okay, maybe that's an option. But the problem is they literally need to add somebody. It's just a question of how much they think it's worth adding.
I'm sure there will be plenty of guys that will be available, and I'm sure they'll add a body or two. I'm just this notion of spending big pick capital is ridiculous because this team can't win the Super Bowl. It can't. It can win a playoff game, maybe even two, but it's not winning the Super Bowl. And so What are we doing jeopardizing the future when the outcome is you can win a playoff game? Like, that works for crappy teams, but not this one.
I mean, it's tough because I feel like if you're John Lynch, you sort of have an obligation to say, all right, we're 6-3 and 3-0 in the division. We have to be pragmatic and realistic. And simultaneously, you know, okay, we actually do have a chance. Like, we are playoff contenders. We are in a position that's really advantageous in terms of where we are in the standings. Mm-hmm. And given the difficulty of competing in the NFL, you could argue you have an obligation to add and compete. Granted, I would argue they did not do that going into the season. Yeah. And then they sort of stumbled and literally limped into a position where now they're 6-3 and 3-0. And so do you say, all right, we try and add somebody who fits our timeline that keeps us competitive with the knowledge that we suck at drafting in the third round, which I would say is bad process. If you go and say,
terrible,
hey, we're so bad at drafting the third round, we should just say, forget that pick and let's add somebody because we can't add real players. I would also say that they have like $280 million already committed to the cap next year and like $310 million 2 years down the road. Yeah. Adding anybody that's going to add to your salary cap is going to be a problem. And you're going to be able to navigate it. But it's hard for me to rationalize someone who's got any sort of big price tag in terms of contract and any sort of day one or two pick.
They've already used
unless somebody brings something back, like a fifth. If it's a third and a fifth, and it's a guy with like 2 years left, I get it. But outside
it's
of
such
that,
such a narrow band. I mean, it's plausible, but the idea that they can't put together a bunch of draft picks that are a bit lower and try to get somebody because they've already used up all of their low draft picks to bring in Brian Robinson and to bring in White and Huff and.
They literally can't Jordan touch Jefferson. The fourth or fifth or sixth and their seventh because the seventh's attached to Keon White.
They've already used up all the picks that would be prime for trading because they had to trade for a bunch of guys at the beginning of this season, literally the beginning of the season, because their 53-man roster coming out of camp was a fucking disaster. So they had to make a bunch of trades then.
And because they were obviously focused on the compensatory formula and not wanting to add too many guys so that you get fourth rounders next year, but that also means that you end up spending picks this year because you just didn't add enough players and you traded one away in Jordan Mason, which whatever.
Whatever. Already traded that pick. That pick's gone now.
But that's
what
I mean. They literally, their fourth through seventh, they can't touch.
Right.
That's not that. And the compensatory picks won't come in until after the season's over. So you can't do anything with those either.
So you have a first, a second, and a third that you can trade. I don't think the third is conditional at all.
I think it's a normal third.
Okay, so they have their first, second, and third. They cannot trade those. Not for this, because again, who can you get back? I'm saying one player. Who can you make a trade for right now that turns the San Francisco 49ers into a team that can win the Super Bowl?
Like Myles Garrett, which you can't get, right?
You're not getting him.
And Trey Hendrickson doesn't really do that much.
He doesn't.
Jeffrey Simmons would do something.
He's absolutely the closest, and I don't even think it's enough. Like I don't think that adding a Jeffrey Simmons gets this team over the hump, because a Jeffrey Simmons does not make up
for
Nick Bosa and a Fred Warner.
But it would be fun.
I don't disagree. It would be really fun. No, it would make our lives a lot easier too.
Let me be clear. I fundamentally agree with you. I just think on the premise of this shit would be really sick.
Yeah,
we shouldn't rule it out.
Well, first off, you should rule it out because John Lynch doing stuff that is cool and sick hasn't happened in 3 years. So I guess that's not true. I guess they drafted Mikel. A lot of good that did him. I do need to say that I thought Mikel was a dud.
I agree.
Just because
he
got injured.
Very impactful today.
I get it. You're going up against Andrew Thomas. I thought it was.
I mean, that's Nevin also said it. Yeah. I mean, he was a dud today. I didn't see him impacting the game. I mean, I think he was, again, when I rewatch the tape, I always find him more impactful in the run game and a lot of stuff that gets slowed down and doesn't go his way. But I didn't see him really doing anything as a pass rusher. And he was also not on the field all that much, which is like rough that late in a game that you've already won. And that's not a criticism of the coaching staff at all. Like, it's, you got to play players, but it's tough.
And they need to figure out who's good and who's not. Like, they have an idea on Mikel. Running him out there for 50 something snaps could be the right decision, but also, you know, hey, like, as bad as this sounds, like, this is the last chance you're going to get to see if Robert Beal can give you anything, because next week you have the Rams and you don't have the opportunity to trade for anybody. So this was the last, I mean, this was a referendum game on the whole. This was the last referendum for a lot of players that, like, okay, hey, like, can we count on Sam Ekwonu? I think you can. I thought he had a nice game.
I think he's their best defensive lineman by far right now.
Right. Can you count on Keon? Like, I thought White played well. Like, he was fine.
I wouldn't say he played well. I think he was okay. I think he had one good rep, and then he sort of, I haven't watched his whole tape, but, like,
and then
he did.
Then Klee had a nice sack as well. Like, there were moments, right? Like, it's like, okay, right. I can work with this. But then you see Beal is out there, and you're like, oh, damn, how many snaps did Beal got? I just noticed him just because he was in the front of a frame on a replay, and you're like, oh, damn, Beal was in the entire time. It turned out he's in, like, the entire game. So not great, and something that you have to make note of when you are trying to figure out what you need, which is just about everything right now.
Right. And so I think the position they're in, let's just restate it, is you go 500 and you're obviously in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Clearly. You're making the playoffs at 10-7. Are you winning the division? Maybe not. You might need to get to 11. But 10 also might do it, because this division ends up cannibalizing itself. Everybody's got second half games and gets weird ones.
If you win next week, you are far and away the favorites to win the division.
If you don't, it's pretty embarrassing.
I mean, next week is kind of for the division in a lot of ways.
I agree. It's
because you and have then you've the got two the
Cardinals
Rams,
who, if you're the 49ers, you're really hoping Kyler Murray comes back for that game. You're really hoping Kyler's back on the field. And then 100% what Robert Saleh's doing is like, man, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a real challenge with Kyler back.
He's so good.
He presents a lot of problems for us scrambling.
Yeah.
It's going to be a major challenge. We got to be fundamentally sound. We got to be on our P's and Q's. We got to communicate well. And then you win, because Kyler just has given up on trying to play quarterback, I think.
Well, and I think they've given up on him as well. I mean, they shadow benched him this week, which, listen, could have told you. Could have told you. I heard the scoffs in the press box. Along that note, not to push too far ahead, because this Rams game is huge.
Right.
But the Cardinals offense was on display today in the New York Giants and their lesser version of the Cardinals offense. And can we just shout out D. Winters? I know that Tatum Bethune's going to get a lot of love, and he deserves it. He had a very nice game. But he had a prolific game statistically. I thought Winters was the better linebacker today because of his ability to cover the flats, which they figured out after the first drive. Like, oh, damn, they're doing it. Like, they're actually doing the all-flats offense. And
what an ugly offense.
It's depressing. Also,
the Giants reporters, is that what you're going to get into?
I'm not. You can take that one.
I'm going to say it straight up. Go. It's very uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, the kid's got aura, or whatever term kids use now.
It's upsetting. It's upsetting to see on the internet, and I need to mute it.
That's a general good process. I don't even remember the. What was it? Oh, the Jackson Dart keeping his eyes downfield argument. It's like, no, he isn't.
Right.
No, he isn't. It's fake
hustle. He's like looking, and then he's like, oh, God, I got to run.
It is. They are forcing. So, yeah, quarterbacks are supposed to manipulate a defense with their eyes. They have effectively come up with a rubric.
Not their aura.
They've come up with a rubric where it's like, you just look straight down the field. Everyone's going to back up, and then you're going to hit the flat. And it's like, that's not keeping your eyes downfield. Yeah. That's just running the play. You're not actually reading anything. You're literally going through motions.
I did see a cut to him on the sidelines where he was like adjusting his like special eye black. And I went, come on.
I don't want to go too hard in on Jackson Dart because it's a different generation thing.
And it's not even, and it's not, right. And
it doesn't offend me. Whatever. Like, yeah, he's a kid. This is how kids act. That's fine.
He doesn't seem like a bad dude, right?
He seems just fine. You got a lot of shit going on. That's fine.
Right.
Get a wife and kids. You won't have time for any of that stuff. Go to town. Like, you could be Russ Wilson and be a cornball, or you can be young, and then it's not corn.
By the way, the cuts to Jameis on the sideline crack me up every single time, where he's wearing number 19, which I'm like, I don't think I've ever seen a quarterback.
An all-time Coachella jersey.
It's like a Blake Sims number, I think. That's like
there you go.
Yeah, and he's just standing there, and he's got like a crazy face on, and he's just like jumping up and down. I love it. I don't know what he's doing over there, but he's having fun.
There's somebody who should get traded. Like,
yeah,
if you can trade Joe Flacco in the division, someone go get Jameis. Like, clearly, we've never run through the possibility of, like, I know that McCarthy played well today, but if he played poorly, like, go get Jameis, Kevin McCarthy. Like,
also, like, just for the vibes, like, it's just fun to have like a weird fun guy there, right?
Yes. Yeah. Mac was talking about like how much he enjoys the room and how much he enjoys Adrian Martinez. And that's great. Like, that is an important, it's nice to like the guys, people you go to work with. Jake and I can't relate to that, but like, it is nice to enjoy talking to the person that you have to talk to all month or in all week. But, Jameis is like all time locker room, dude, like all time,
eating those W's.
Weird cat.
But odd guy, but
you need basically, I think the argument here is that every team needs a lower Alabama quarterback in their room because it produces some strange people. Mac Jones, Jameis Winston.
Yes.
Characters come out of lower Alabama.
It's like the Drew Gilbert position on the Giants where you need a weird energy guy. Also, every time Mac talks, what a funny plucky dude.
By the way, Mac 14 for 14 to start this game, 143 yards. I mean, was he really 14 for 14? No, that was an interception. But that was the game plan. That's the blueprint for the 49ers. You have nothing going up against you. Like, this Giants defense was finding dudes like just before the game in the Meadowlands parking lot being like, can you play corner?
That was not fair to that rookie UDFA Black corner.
Yeah.
Got picked on and like may never play in a game again.
Juwan Jennings it can't really be a whip route
I've ever seen.
It can't be a whip route because if you did it that slow, it's just more of a flop. It wouldn't actually
look like
a
they were shooting
sound.
It with like a 4K camera, just
doing the 24 frames per
yes,
the slow mo cam on the iPhone. I guess it'd be more like 240 frames per second, but Mac was impeccable. And they ran the ball. I mean, McCaffrey touched it 33 times. Robinson got it another 5. That's the game plan. There it is. Yeah. It's the Garoppolo offense, except Mac was cooking. He was cooking. There were some nice throws in there.
And he was also doing the thing of showing pure exasperation for the wide receivers at different times in the game.
Deserved at times. Can I also, he's not a stud for me, but can we shout out Jordan Watkins, who gets a catch on, what was it, a 2nd and 20? Early in the game.
Yeah, that was a big one, actually.
Kind of reset the tone of the game. So.
And honestly, I think we need to go back to that first drive of Kyle going for it, right? Like,
well, he didn't want to, did he?
He was in between. He was like, it's less than a yard. All right. He's very specific that if it's less than a yard and they can sneak it, yes.
Yeah, this man does not operate on gut.
But
not 1 ounce.
That was a major decision where they go down, score a touchdown, and then the Giants felt like they never, like it felt like it would have been a game if they didn't get that, right? If they end that possession basically on a 3-and-out, and then the Giants get the ball back up 7-0. And I still think the 49ers end up winning that game, but it is like a major, major point in that game.
They put 34 points on the board without a turnover. Like, the offense was cooking.
The Giants suck. The Giants suck.
Terrible. They really suck. But again, they lined up. It was a 4th and 1. They lined up to just go for it, like, immediately.
Yeah.
They then send out the punt unit. It took too long, so they call a timeout. So they burned a timeout now within 3 plays of their first offensive series. It was like, we are off to just a rip-roaring start after that defensive malpractice on the first drive, and now this.
I mean, they did, as people are pointing out, they did turn the ball over. Remember, Matt got stripped through.
No, I'm saying they scored 34 points
without
the Giants turning the ball
over. Yes, correct.
They weren't given, like, they had to play it straight up.
Correct.
And then they go for it. Was there a false start on that?
Juice? Was it the juice?
No. I'm talking about after they.
Oh, I didn't even see it.
I don't know what they were talking about on that.
But Jones gets it on the first down.
Well, you know, that's what happens when you're insecure. You get angry. You lash out at people. Just a little insight from my psychiatrist to you. I can. I mean, I think it's fun in the meantime. Mike McDaniel can make it to the end of the year. Brian Daboll can. And they'll both be looking for work at the end of the year because. They're both just haphazard operations. But you get a nice swing pass from CMC, and then you hit Watkins on that deep over for 19 yards on a just a hell of a fight with Banks. And next thing you know, it's CMC 17-yard run pitch left with Juice on the lead, and then they score a touchdown at 7-7, and they were off to the races. It was critical. The first drive of the game very rarely matters like it did here. It did. So shout out Jordan Watkins.
Yeah, no, shout out him. I thought that was crucial. Kind of shout out Sky Moore. A couple like good returns. Yeah. Did a good job. Had one catch for a first down. I thought for a guy that we just assume is going to be usually useless, I thought he was helpful.
Yeah, he had a 21-yard catch on the seventh drive to set up the 20-7 lead.
I also want to mention both Kittle and Luke Farrell. I thought they did a pretty phenomenal job in the run game. Farrell looks like a new player with Kittle back. Like
Gap
fundamentally
suits him.
Yep. He looks like what they thought he was going to be.
Yep. And he had a nice catch too.
He did. Everyone kind of got their hands.
We talked about it after the Atlanta game. I mean, it's such a different thing having to be the tight end two versus the tight end one, and how you are utilized in blocking. Just being offline is huge for him, because you put Kittle on the line as sort of a sixth offensive lineman, and then having Farrell as the move tight end, even if he doesn't move, it just changes it. He can get two steps in before he has to hit somebody.
And I don't think it's a coincidence that the juice dash motion stuff really started with Kittle back and having the flexibility, because it felt like Juice had to pick up some of that slack and he didn't look right. And now he's back in sort of the mobile move fullback role that he likes. And it feels like the running game is back. And again, they haven't faced exactly the toughest run defenses, but
no, Atlanta Giants are legitimately two of the worst in the NFL. The Giants were the worst in the NFL, but
with
the state of this roster, you take nothing for granted. Let's also just quickly note the referees. Bad game for the referees. We don't like to do this. We don't like to blame the refs in losses, because you got to play, you know.
Yeah.
And we don't like to. I don't like to go in on refs for bad calls. I'm just looking for answers here. Like, where was the illegal shift on that third and one that ended up killing the Juice one? Who was illegally shifting?
It was supposed to be Juice, and I just don't think he ever got fully set.
No, they said it's an illegal shift. Two men were in motion. Who was the other person in motion?
He said two men were in motion. I thought they called it on 44.
They called it on 44 because you have to call it on one person. Who was still in motion?
I don't
know. It wasn't an illegal formation.
I think it was just Juice. Yeah.
I only saw Juice moving, and I guess they can make the if he doesn't stop, that's fine. That's an illegal shift.
I think that's what it was. I think that's what it was supposed to be.
Well, the referee verbally explained 2 minutes. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Though that
I thought the
felt
worst
like
one
that
was
like a moment.
The worst was one the worst was one? Was the one on Bethune, where it's like Jackson Dart isn't even really giving himself up. The way they legislate it with quarterbacks versus McCaffrey or any other running back, where you're just like, they're a runner. He's in the middle of the field. He didn't start a slide. I don't know what you're supposed to do. I don't know how you're supposed to.
It's a terrible call. It was so bad they called up Gene Steratore, who usually comes in to be like, refs are right. You're stupid.
Right. This was a broadcast that didn't even have a ref on. And they're like, can we get Gene on the phone? They called him an hour later, and Gene's like, yeah, that was terrible.
It was just bizarre too, because if you read the rule, there's a specific one for the quarterback, and then there's a general one, which is you can't lead with the crown of your helmet, effectively the targeting rule in college football,
right?
Which you can make the argument that Bethune in fact did that on that play, that he
did
led
you know
with his
that
head
tackling. You actually have to lead with your head.
Yeah, no. that's my favorite part. It's like That book is on the that rule is on the books.
Yeah,
you would call that 45 times a game if you were to call it by the book.
It's so impossible to tackle someone unless you're leaning backwards to not lead with your head.
So you can make that call on the basis of this is not he is in fact not a quarterback. He is a ball carrier now.
Right,
but he led with the head, and he made. But then you would say actually, there's a different terminology for that, not a hit to the head or neck area. By the way, hit him in the shoulder. So it's like,
oh yeah.
So, okay. He led with the crown of his head. That's a foul. But then you called it as to where he got hit, which is almost specifically, and certainly in practice, a quarterback only rule, which should no longer apply based on the fact that he's giving himself up as a runner. And you called this on the Thursday or Friday stream That some bitch don't slide. So no. He's never giving himself up. He's merely just falling into whatever path is about to hit him. And right. I thought that was a very, very bad, very bad sequence. I thought that was terrible. They follow that up with the illegal motion call, and it's like, oh boy, we are falling apart here. And it felt like that could have changed the game because it was 20-10 at the time. So that penalty sets up, I mean, luckily for the Niners, because Mustafa made that incredible open field play on the flat on third and goal. It sets up a 22-yard field goal, which is the coward's distance.
Can I give you another dud?
Yeah, and then get the illegal motion. Sure you can.
Khalil Davis, I thought he got moved around
quite
a bit. I didn't think their front looked great at all. No. There's almost an argument that they should, if they were going to get a defensive lineman, a defensive tackle would help more. It doesn't really make sense given that they have West not even playing, but I don't know.
They need as many bodies as they can get, and I would use any capital to get one good guy and try to get seven mediocre guys and just...
Well, they have a few mediocre guys already.
Boy, do they. Renardo Green, I thought, had a great game. Stead.
I would agree. It felt like he got a lot of man opportunities, and it was a little bit more straightforward, which is sort of the inverse of what we talked about of, like, will Salah try and mix it up on Dart? And he's like, no. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did throw a few blitzes at him on third down, but really it was like, we're going to rush four and maybe you'll beat us with our legs, which he did quite a few times. Mm-hmm. But also, we don't think you can read the field, and we think your offense is kind of a joke. So we're going to play coverage, and eventually we'll get home.
Yeah, I found that to be the most interesting development. Now, they did start bringing guys a little bit later on in the game. Maybe they had seen enough of Dart with his feet, but that was an interesting call for the first three quarters of the game, that they made the decision, we'll let Jackson Dart beat us.
Yeah.
Let's see if he can. And Jackson Dart's like, nah, I'm good. Wandale Robinson isn't wide open in the flat.
I like that he's only targeted at 2 yards past the line of scrimmage.
I mean, you look at his I call it a shot chart, but his passing chart or his dot chart. Yeah. It's just hilarious. It's the Cardinals offense all over again without cool wide receivers. So you can imagine how that goes. Renardo, there weren't a lot of man-to-man situations. Ironically, they were mostly in... They're mostly off of blitzes, which were few and far between.
Right.
And they kept going his direction on those, you know, when it was man-to-man behind some blitzes. And he just made play after play. He's outstanding. And you add in Stout, who had his downsides, but I thought had way more ups than downs today.
He looked a lot. And he just looked like he was making decisions quicker. Like it seemed to me that he was not really hesitating.
Yeah. And then, you know, then there's Lenore of it all. Colt McKivitz. By the way,
Colt McKivitz was a dud. Real quick, Jackson Dart threw two balls more than 15 yards past the line of scrimmage.
One of them should have been a touchdown. Jair Brown both made a terrible play and then a great play on that.
One of them was a touchdown.
Well, yeah. Yeah, but I'm talking about the touchdown. Which touchdown was that?
Lenore allowed. The second one Lenore allowed.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Where he just didn't even look like he was, I don't know what that was.
He just spinning his head like a top. Again, rookie mistakes for a captain.
When Jair Brown's going over to you and you're a captain and another guy's talking to you, you shouldn't really have the C on your chest. If like you're getting in a verbal spat with a former player and someone else is like, hey, I need you to lock in. And he's like, come on. But like, he's like, Jair's like, no, just like lock in.
You could
clearly see that on the field. It's not a good sign.
Was it? No, they had. I'm trying. Was it the first touchdown? No.
The first touchdown, yes. Lenore didn't tackle him.
To Johnson. He was, right.
Yes. He was very soft. And then the other one.
Sorry. That was a dump off pass.
Right.
Yes. The other one split
him and Mustafa in coverage. And both of them were like, I guess, whatever.
Yeah. I'm just trying to.
Mustafa did have that big stop, though, on that.
Right.
Third down.
Yes. Yes. Was... Yes. The one to the white guy kick return. Sorry.
Old chef Olszewski.
Yeah, I'm not going to try. I grew up in a Polish neighborhood. And I'm not even going to try that one.
Nice.
Any other studs or duds from this game, Jake?
I guess Pinheiro for barely squeaking that one through.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how high you kick it. As long as it gets over that bar. He's Cam Little's awesome. Kicking a 68 yarder.
54 yards, didn't have it from 55.
No, I'm just excited that Kyle went for it.
I love it.
Like, that for sure felt like kind of the end of the Eddie Pinheiro love story for Kyle. Like, he's like, well, you know, it's a kicker. Right back into this natural mode of hating kickers and never trusting them. And instead, Eddie Pinheiro's like, hell yeah, let's do this, brother. I'm going to line drive the shit out of this.
Yeah, he's like, he's the exact kicker where it's like 99 accuracy, like 75 kick power.
It's great. It's great. I got nothing wrong with it. Remember when this team kept Jake Moody around off of reasons? That was smart.
You know when you're playing, well, I guess you haven't played in a while, but where it's you're playing college football and it's like the stadium effect and the screen starts shaking.
We're talking about stadium pulse, baby.
Yeah. Every Jake Moody kick was just like the fastest bar you've ever seen in your life.
Stadium pulse is a big meme on the group chats these days. Yeah, people love
it. It's good.
People love it.
It's good. CMC was obviously a stud. By the way,
I just love people who are diving in like an hour into the show and being you're not talking CMC.
How dare you? Thank you for joining the channel, Chad. He was clearly a stud. I think it was just he was so obviously a stud. We didn't really mention it. He looked great. Didn't he pass Marshall Faulk for some sort of thing today?
Anytime you can do that. There was some touchdown that they kept in a box. Yeah. 33 touches, 173 yards. It's a
pretty good
yard and a quarter per touch. That'll do. Yeah. That'll do. Offensive line was great. Burford
in the run game.
In the run game. And you know what? I'll give it to him in the pass game too. McKivitz had a tough day with Burns. Trent was really good.
I didn't really notice Trent, which was a really good sign, except for the run game where he's getting down in space and you go, ooh, 71's moving.
That boy,
it's my favorite thing in the world is watching Trent Williams in open space and people getting legitimately and rightfully terrified.
Burford, Hennessy in the run game as well. And then I thought Pooney had an up and down game. I'm excited to see it on second glance. It was probably more up than down, if I'm just guessing.
I didn't notice Hennessy that much. Yeah. I think that's a good sign. We'll see. I'll grade it all out.
Again, this is just kind of one of those things where everyone bitches and complains about the offensive line. And it's like, okay, so what were you expecting? One, I mean, listen, I was the one out here saying they could be a top five, top 10 offensive line. So I had the higher expectations. If I set your expectations, I was wrong. But if you're just expecting middle of the road and good enough, like this is what happens when you play a really good defense, it's going to look awful. And when you play a really bad defense, it's going to look great.
By the way, how about the two double last name guys showing up for the Giants? The ones I mentioned, Roy Robertson.
This is why we
Harris
do the tape study.
And I forgot the other one's name.
Roches.
Nunes Roches.
Nunes Roches, former chief. They could use him right now. It is. This is why you watch the tape. I mean, legitimately, like, because if you watch four or five games, if you go through every Jackson Dart throw twice, like I did, you notice some stuff, even if you're a moron like us. You notice some stuff, and you're like, I think Nunes Roches is good. And there he was. He was pretty damn good. How about this? Here's an idea. Go get Dexter Lawrence. Go get him.
Sure.
Because he doesn't seem very happy there at all.
No. No, and he's clearly, like, hurting and also being put in a role that, like, has not suited him.
I don't know what they're doing. They're not a well-coached team. I mean,
realistically, like this, even with the injuries that they have, like this is a roster that if it was a well-coached team, if you put Saleh as their defense, if you just switch coaching staffs, the result is, I think, guaranteed to be different. If you switch these two coaching staffs right for this game, the Giants would have won, I think. I really truly believe that.
It's an interesting thought exercise. I'm not sure I'm willing to go all the way down there with you, but
that's fair.
The problem with Lawrence
is he costs quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. I was just throwing shit on the wall. Let's just remind everybody that Shane Bowen, the Giants defensive coordinator, was hired because Brian Daboll went on PFF, red flag, and was like, hey, this guy's really good according to these PFF stats. They'll never do another offseason Hard Knocks again, but thank God they did, because what a window of enlightenment that was.
Was that on was, how, I didn't watch that whole series. Did he really find him on PFF? Is that how we?
They awesome. Fired him in Tennessee, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, we need a defensive coordinator. And yeah, they hired him because in like the conversation as it was documented was him going in and being like, this guy has like, check out these stats on PFF.
Oh man, that's tough. That's not a good look. That's not a good look for
him. I'll send you the video. It's incredible. It's incredible. Yeah. They're not good.
Yeah. These Giants are bad. And if Dable keeps his job after this year,
he shouldn't keep his job tomorrow. Like I
no.
But they don't no. have, this is the other thing. They don't have ownership. And I know that there were some folks this week being like, oh, the York should sell the team, which they will never do ever.
They've also, thanks to some of what the NFL has changed with the rules, have figured out how to maintain full control and just keep selling off little chips for massive chunks of cash.
Right.
Which, you know, I'm not a fan of billionaires, but if you're going to be a billionaire, good for you.
Do it right. There's actually, it's a bad investment. Just going to throw that out there. It's a bad investment to do this minority deal.
Oh, yeah. I don't really understand.
Where you invest hundreds of millions of dollars to get 2% or whatever of a team.
Right.
And I suppose that it's such a minor amount of money to these people that it's kind of like, you know, sponsoring someone at the walkathon. Like, I guess I'll own 1% of the 49ers.
Oh man, I haven't thought about a walkathon in a minute.
Well, I'm entering the era, my friend. And nice. So in that, but like the idea that NFL teams, I do feel like there's a cap. I feel like we're coming up pretty close to the limitation of how much these teams can be worth. And I understand that like real estate, they're not making more of them, which is not particularly true, but they're not going to make enough of them to keep up with demand, to be sure.
Yeah. They'll add two more teams.
I don't know if they will.
Or at least they'll
try. The NBA's having a hard time doing it. So I would just say that I'm not sure it's a great investment in that, like, okay, the Niners are worth what? $8 billion, right?
Right.
$9 billion. Are they getting to 15?
Who knows?
Can you double your money? I don't know. Just seems, I guess you
can.
I mean,
the way these prices inflate, sure, they'll get to 15. But like I don't understand how you get that money back.
So my initial point was like they're just kind of throwing money at something. And I guess there are more destructive ways to waste a bunch of money if that's what they wanted to.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Kawachipa with a fundamentally false statement. Plenty of people watch the NBA. They just keep getting people to watch it. It's unbelievable. It's so funny how that happens. It's almost as if they get millions of people watching it every week. I'm just so not moved by this game. I was impressed by how the Niners did it. It felt like the blueprint, and they have to play like this in every game moving forward.
Right.
And perhaps they can, but this was the easiest test they're going to have, and I guess good for them that they aced it.
It felt to me fundamentally like, okay, they checked off something going into the week. We had to do this. We have to go get this win.
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty straightforward as long as we don't completely botch it and turn the ball over. And they didn't.
Yeah.
So they checked the box, and then you go into this week and say, is there a move to be made?
Right.
Maybe, probably not a great one, but I'm curious because sometimes Lynch holds pat, but it does feel like they like to make moves around the deadline. I mean, they made a trade deadline move literally every single year, I believe, since 2019, including my favorite one, which came last year, and I have completely forgotten his name.
Khalil Davis.
Khalil Davis, thank you.
We have a Kalia. Now we have a Khalil.
That's my favorite trade of all time. It's so funny.
You see, we did something.
He was going to get cut, and they were like, we got to get him. We got to get this guy who's never produced.
I'm of the mindset that the Niners should never trade for a defensive tackle again because it's not going that well.
No.
They do that. It's maybe that's a position that is really difficult.
And
especially if someone's willing to cut somebody at a position that everyone has need at, it's like cutting a reliever and then trading for him. It's like,
it is interesting that they got sort of like an off-brand Mikel replacement, and then Mikel goes out. So I guess they'll just use Keon White exactly how they were using Mikel and be like, well, hopefully he can do the same job.
Yeah. 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 I mean, you could also say a Yetur Gross-Matos one. I'm perplexed as to how this team, if you want to get in, if I want to go in on anything as it pertains to like health and performance, how this team manages, this is more of a John Lynch thing, how this team manages IR is befuddling.
What the hell was the Andre Dillard, Brandon Parker thing where they like cut Brandon Parker and then they're like, we're signing Andre Dillard. And then a day later,
they just keep doing shit like this. And then
there's always a rational explanation. I'm not saying there is. I'm saying some people love to be like, ooh, no, there's actually a good reason that they did this.
They're like, spending they spend a lot of time to save a little bit of money, which I'm not very good at business, as evidenced by our subscriber count, but like doesn't seem like good business. Doesn't seem they spend a lot of time. This is why, you know, Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Russell Gage and all that, they just keep playing like, oh, well, you know, we could save a little bit of money.
Russell Gage was going to be a big deal, and then he just has not played at all.
He was supposed to be a big deal. I mean, he hasn't played. He has not even on the team, as far as I know.
No, I think he's on the practice squad still.
Well, it could have fooled me. MVS got signed by the Steelers, I think.
Yeah, I refuse to watch the Steelers play football.
When do they play next?
I couldn't tell you. Refuse to watch.
Monday. Who do they play?
No, I think they play today.
They play the Seahawks tomorrow.
They beat the Colts today.
The Steelers beat the Colts today?
The Steelers beat the Colts. This is the beginning of the downfall. It's because I bet on the Colts and mentioned it to you, which I knew I shouldn't have done. I was like, I only need one more win.
I am in a preposterously high stakes pickup league, and it's not that high stakes. It's just college dipshits. But
nice.
That was my big, bold, stupid upset pick of the week, which was Steelers over Colts.
Oh, I love that for you. Yeah, it felt like they were due because, I mean, the Colts schedule is rough. We talked about it this week. Like, it could get ugly for them quick. Daniel Jones started to look like old Daniel Jones real quick.
It's just such a classic Steelers move where they're like, oh, you thought we're complete ass? Check this out. We're going to put it together for 1 week. Mike Tomlin will never be sub 500.
Never.
And they never. And they will not come close to winning a Super Bowl because that defense up until this week, as the Colts are on a path to be like the 2007 Patriots, and they're like, check this shit out.
Yeah, I love that. Let me. Should we hit a couple comments?
God, should we? I have turned in a Giants level performance today.
There are not too many.
What do we have? How about this?
Yeah,
let's start with this one.
Griff. Do we think they keep Burford at left guard or give it back to Barch? It's a good question. I would probably stick with Burford for another week. He's healthy. Yeah. They brought him off IR.
That's a question we can better answer come Tuesday. But
it's also Barch is still on IR, so then you need to clear a roster spot. So
that's easy to do.
This team
has had no problem. This team is keeping dudes who could not possibly play for them on the active roster.
What a bizarre roster they've constructed.
That's what I'm saying. Like, Brock Purdy should have been IR'd right after the Jaguars game.
Yeah.
Right after.
But they didn't. But they knew that they were going to have a lot other IR spots to go, and you get like seven. They're like, listen.
Oh, I forgot about the designated to return standard. They already bumped up against
the wall.
It's
not about designated to return. That's a bunch of bullshit. I think if you do it before the season, like Givens, he was designated to return, and that's how you can steal two. But you can place anyone on IR. But you can only return like seven of them, if I recall correctly.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You're right. It's a semantical argument, but a correct one. I'm saying in the colloquial sense, designated to return.
Exactly.
Yes, that would have been an issue.
Benalis, what are the odds on Purdy playing? I think he's back next week, but it's.
I bet he plays against the Rams.
I think he does. I mean, we also sort of set that up weeks ago where that was our prediction. So there's no reason for us to change that now. But it always felt like that was a good landing spot in terms of crucial game. Rams are going to dial it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, or, I mean, or maybe Mac, yeah. Mac's about ready to die. Like, Mac's body can't do anymore.
Well, I like that he decided he's going to run more than he ever has with two bad knees.
Mac will do whatever needs to be done. Did you hear? I think they said shoulder injury. I'm like, I didn't know about a shoulder injury.
I saw Juwan Jennings pick up another injury where they're massaging. They're like, Juwan Jennings has two bad ankles, five broken ribs. It looks like he's added a shoulder injury.
Yeah. This team, you know what? Like, it's going to take on this sort of like, I can't believe it thing. Like, I think that when we are away from this season and we're not in the thick of it anymore, yeah. I think we will remember this season very fondly for what it portends for the future. If this team can keep figuring out ways, they haven't lost back-to-back games this year, I don't think. Like, if they can keep figuring out ways to just piece it together and win with these scraps and Christian McCaffrey, like, that speaks a lot of volumes.
It feels like a good experiment season, just in terms of sometimes when I play FIFA, I keep making these analogies, but like, sometimes I'll mess with the tactics and you're like, hey, should I try gegenpressing? Oh, that's not working. That's not working for this team. We don't have the stamina for that. Let's try something else. And you're like, I know we're not going to do anything this year, but you got a lot of different players. Let's see what they work at and sort of figure out what part of our identity sticks and what evolves. And they're getting basically not a free opportunity because they have some real injuries that might cost their future.
Right.
But they're sort of getting a free opportunity to experiment with what works. And Salah's just, I think that's what he was getting at early in the year in terms of the roller coaster. He's like, I'm going to try some shit and not all of it's going to work.
Well, and I want to talk to you after we've watched the film about this. Yeah. It feels like Salah, I have no problem with his defensive game plan today. I thought it was smart, and it certainly worked. Lenore excluded. But it does feel like he's kind of run out of patience for the kids. And I get it.
Yeah.
But I also need him to remember kind of the tone he entered the season with, because it is about 26, right? And it's about 26 now more than ever. And I get that maybe you want to tighten some stuff up because, hey, you know, the stakes are really high. We need to win games and make the playoffs and all that stuff. Like, we don't want to lose this season. But it does feel as if, you know, with what he did today with Siegel and West and sort of the tight leashes that he's playing with, it feels like he's kind of out on the youth experiment. And
I mean, the fact that Siegel was inactive was pretty surprising to me.
I don't like him. I'm excited to talk to him about it. No, I'm
not a fan of
it
either. Not a fan of it either. But, yeah. We'll see.
Bad stuff.
Should we get out of here?
Absolutely. we'll talk on Tuesday. We'll talk either Thursday, Friday.
I guess we should do a... Maybe we'll go live after the trade deadline or after they've made a trade or not. Something like that.
Yeah, I think that's two birds, one stone, baby. We'll have some fun.
One stone.
Bye.
Bye.